So Rod was kind enough to make a little outline. I'll just maybe talk the best way to get it around. Okay. So, like I said, I'm Christian Allen. I started with this, I guess it was 2004, so it's been a little while now. Right as I returned home from a mission, I got into the business, and this has been what I've done exclusively for my entire working career. So I'm passionate about the business. I love it. It's been really good to me too. So we're going to talk today about the living benefits of whole life insurance specifically. I think it was probably 5 years ago where I started to really feel like I wanted to, well, let me back up for a minute. When I first got into the industry, I really wanted to focus on the investment side of the business. Maybe some of you feel the same way or have felt the same way, but that kind of seemed like the sexy way to go, for lack of a better word. And I got in the industry fully because I couldn't have all my focus be on the investment side. Now, the life insurance thing is just going to be something that that I had to do because people needed it, right? But learning the business and having the experience of being through some kind of market fluctuations and so forth, I was able to gain more of an appreciation. And really, I started in the what we call the insurance-based side of financial planning, right? So I worked with life insurance companies, initially with Beneficial Life, and then moved to spent several years with Penn Mutual, and still write a lot of my business there. But I'm independent now. It was probably 5 years ago where I started to really believe that I wanted to focus my practice and business on selling what we're calling the living benefits of the life insurance. And right now, that's the majority of what Rod and I do. And production probably doesn't matter, so I won't throw out production numbers, but we went from having a difficult time selling it to being able to sell it a significant amount. We'll just go with that. So, I remember the first meeting where Rod and I are sitting across a potential client at a lunch meeting, and we want to talk about whole life insurance and how we can position this for some of our individual to help them benefit their world, to benefit their business. And we just kind of ended up scrambling over our words. We had a really difficult time getting out the message, even though we knew it was valuable for them, we knew we believed in it. And so I'm hoping that today we can focus on, or at least what I'm going to attempt to do is focus on how to sell it, and actually a strategy that you can use to go out and be successful in helping people better understand how this incredible product can be valuable for their personal security. Okay, so Rob was kind enough also to make those awesome handouts, and so we're going to use those as kind of our primary outline. Before I do that, let me just talk through what I'm hoping to get down today. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to talk through, that doesn't work, hold on. I'm going to talk through what we call the key characteristics. And this is just a really simple way to help introduce the concept. Now, obviously, you have to have a client to talk to, right? And so we're not going to talk about prospecting specifically, but we are going to talk about, once we're sitting in front of a client, how we can help them better understand the value of the living benefits of life. So we're going to talk about key characteristics first, and then we're going to talk about how to use those benefits in real life situations. So we're going to talk about what we call the wealth maximization game.
You're a different color, like bigger?
Yeah, too small, huh? And not big enough. Hold on. Let's try it. I'll go bigger and see if this works. My handwriting's awful. Just a warning. Okay, so we're talking about the wealth maximization game. Let's see if I can spell it.
Okay, sorry.
Hold on. Okay, we got it. We use that terminology just to differentiate what the values really are, right? So obviously the idea here is to focus on living benefits, and the death benefit can be one of those living benefits, but in this case we're really going to focus on how it can create value while they're alive, while they're working, while they're retiring, etc. And then you might even have a chance to go through an illustration so we can show how we build it. So we just want to talk about the structure of the types of policies we normally do. So that's what we're going to do. Okay, so my key characteristics, when we're in front of a client, the first thing that we talk about, well, really the first question we get asked is, how do I earn money in this? Why would I purchase life insurance as a way to accumulate money? And really, we just go into the two phases. The first one is the guaranteed interest rate. Most companies have, really every company has the same guaranteed interest rate. Does everyone know what the guarantees are of whole life? Most companies, I think, have a 4% guarantee. I don't think I've seen any around that have anything different. So it's just across the board, 4%. And then there's another piece of the pie, right? What's that second piece?
Dividends.
So what I talk about initially is I'm talking about the historical dividends. Sometimes what we'll do is we'll even put up a historical dividend from maybe one or two of the major companies to help them see that the guarantees are a component of building cash, but in addition to that, they have the ability to generate additional cash through the payment of dividends. Now, dividends obviously are not guaranteed, and yet we have the benefit of working with companies that have been around for 150 years that have an incredible track record of continuing to pay dividends. So normally when we talk about that, depending on the company we're using, we're going to give them a range of what they can generally expect. Because we're in a low interest rate time frame right now, we're going to talk about somewhere in an additional 1.5% to 2.5%. And some companies may kind of find themselves outside of that range, but the companies that we're using generally are going to be somewhere in the total between a 5.5% and 6% when you consider the guarantee and the dividend. Okay? Any questions on that? That makes sense? Okay, so what we talk about for most people is how we can generate for them, just on a pure cash accumulation basis, about a 5% net return after costs, fees, and things. So 5% in and of itself may not get everyone just super excited, and yet where can I go on a fixed basis with no risk and get a 5% net tax return? Tax-free return. Is there any other place that we just don't know about? Have you guys gotten anything from clients that maybe said, hey, you know, there is this? So as far as I know, there's really no other place where we can go in and safely generate a 5% tax-free return. So that's the first place that we're talking about. And like I say, we'll show, if we have time, we'll go through an illustration and show exactly the way that we structure and build the policies themselves. Okay, so the next thing that we're talking about is safety. Sorry, do you have an extra handout?
Or do we use them all?
Okay, yeah, that's all right. Next thing we're talking about is safety. And maybe I'll start writing this on the board too. No, well, I don't need to. You all have handouts. Okay, so we have, why don't I open it up? What makes a whole life insurance policy safer than most other financial means?
Guaranteed cash value.
Okay, so guaranteed cash, awesome. That's a great place to start. We talked about that in the first point, so they know that much.
Guaranteed premium,
right? So we have several different guarantees.
Company reserves.
Yeah, company reserves, that's a big one. We talk about company reserves a lot. So a lot of times when people come to us, they're talking about concepts that you kind of hear about from in the general world. Oftentimes they'll call infinite banking, cash flow banking, those types of things. And we structure policies in the same way, and yet we're maybe not using them in the exact same way that the traditional infinite bankers do. But the cash reserve part of it comes in because we're talking about basically the difference between the way that, like, a bank works, right? This idea where they can bring money in, they can use the fractional reserve banking system to lend money out multiple times. Whereas with a life insurance company, it's just the opposite. They're extremely highly capitalized. Every company has, by law, a requirement to carry at least a 1-to-1 reserve, but in most cases, other reasons you can think about that life insurance might be considered a safer alternative than maybe most other financial communities? Do we cover them all?
Unilateral contracts?
Yeah, talk about that.
Well, basically, the insurance company is pretty much bound to the contract clause. The insured will not pay the premiums.
Yeah, absolutely. So from a contractual standpoint, you've got a company that's been around for a really long time, right? Hundreds of 150 years in many cases, that's also has a huge amount of cash reserves on hand, that then has a contractual obligation to do what they say they're going to do, right? So yeah, thank you. I'm trying to think, Rod, can you think of anything we missed? We cover it?
Yeah, I'm in.
Okay, so let's move to the next point. So we have the growth part, safety, liquidity is obviously a really critical thing. And so in this situation, we're talking about, and maybe even kind of comparing and contrasting from traditional ways that people save money. I'm talking about things like IRAs, 401ks, etc. But really, well, I'll get into that here in a minute, but maybe the more core important piece is just that these policies have the ability to get cash out of them at a moment's notice, 3 or 4 days, and I can have cash that was in the policy, whether I'm taking it out as a withdrawal or whether I'm taking it out as a loan against the policy, I have the ability to get that money quickly, and it can be used for obviously a variety of different things. And we can talk about here. Let's talk about taxes. Taxes are obviously a huge deal. I kept mentioning we can generate about 5% net tax for return over the life of this policy. We all know what the benefits or what the tax benefits of life insurance are. But one of the things that I'll describe here is the unique way that I can pull money out of life insurance. Not just from a loan perspective. Most people don't realize that life insurance is structured on what's called it's one of the few that's in a last in, first out. Nope, sorry, first in.
Where's my water?
Oh, it's over here. I'm getting a little dry right now already. I kind of expected to be in one of those little rooms and not have to yell. Hold on. Okay. So life insurance, unlike most other vehicles, instead of being last in, first out, right, where the first thing that gets taxed is my principal or my interest, and life insurance really unique. In fact, I can't think of anything really else that's taxed on a first-in, first-out basis, but I might be wrong. Anyone? Anything else? Anyone else know of anything first-in, first-out? Does everyone know what those acronyms mean, basically? Okay. So LIFO, FIFO. But the cool thing is that I can bring out, on a withdrawal basis, all of my principal before I start pulling out interest. And that could be really key as we get into the later stages where we're talking about how to distribute money specifically for retirement income, right? Because we probably don't want to start out by building up a loan if we don't have any intention to pay it back. In this way, we can take out all of the money that we first put in, and then we might move to loans after that one. Everyone clear on taxes? You guys all pretty well understand taxes, or the ability to pull money out tax-free in life insurance, right? We've had the Power of Zero guy here. He probably did a far better job of describing it than I did. But hopefully that gives us a good grasp on it.
I have a question.
Yes.
So in whole life, which I'm not familiar with, I'm trying to learn it.
Yeah.
Does the product that you have like different loan options? I know some of the products have blue loans.
Yeah.
Like either a fixed or a variable loan, or I think, it's a participating or,
Yeah, good question. So I'll just clarify a couple of those points.
In your strategies, do you always take the money out first in, first out, FICO? Or do you sometimes at retirement illustrate a loan option right at the beginning?
Good question. And so let me clarify a couple of things. So the first thing, we only use mutual companies. So, they're companies that we all know and are familiar with. So the policies are therefore participating policies because as a policy owner, I'm literally an owner in the company, which then allows me to participate in dividends. And this is usually what I go through with the client. I probably should have done a better job with that. But it's similar to like a credit union, right? As the company is profitable, as the life insurance company is profitable, they then at the end of a given year participating policyholders. Now, to the second question about how we're bringing money out, and I think your question is specifically as you're starting to draw it out for income, normally the decision as to whether we would bring it out via loan or using a traditional withdrawal would be based on what the person's intention is. And so if someone has the intention to use it for, say, an opportunity, real estate investing, college, maybe it's college funding, maybe who knows what it is. It could be a variety of things. Maybe they want to fix up their house.
Shorter term is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, like short term.
Let's just say.
Yeah,
perfect. 13 months.
Yeah, so if it's going to be a short-term thing, and really it could be a little bit longer term, but as long as the intention is to pay it back, then we'll use a loan. If, on the other hand, the plan is structured and designed to focus on tax-free income with no intention to pay it back, in that case, I think it's almost always better to bring it out on a withdrawal basis first and then move to loans after you've taken the money out.
Is the loan choice, is that what's making it direct recognition or non-direct recognition now?
Yeah.
Is that how it is?
Yeah, so that just has to do with how the company pays interest on the cash value versus how much what they're charging on the loan itself. So different companies use different strategy, direct and indirect. To be honest, there's not a significant difference in what it does from a performance basis. There's a lot of kind of chaos about it. But as far as actual what it's doing for a person from a financial standpoint, I haven't been able to find any significant difference between using the two different ways of doing it. And again, the idea here is that in a non-direct recognition situation, the company may credit the account at a different rate than the loan, whereas in a direct recognition situation, they're always going to have the same interest rate credited in value as they are charging on the loan. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a wash loan versus an arbitrage.
Yeah, that's right. You got it. Good question. Go ahead. So you're asking if the dividend is affected by the way that the loan's taken
out?
Yes,
but if you borrow the cash value out, actually it will affect your next year's dividend. That's the difference with the non-direct recognition and the direct recognition.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I guess what I was suggesting when I mentioned that there's not a significant difference, and maybe this has to do with the companies that are using, you know, just as an example, you'll have most of the companies that are using non-direct recognition are having higher loan rates than they are paying out in interest. But I think what you're saying is accurate.
So do you know about the Northwestern
Mutual,
what's the interest?
I don't know what they're... So Northwestern being exclusive is about the only company that I'm less familiar with. I think they're probably paying an interest and dividend rate of in the 4.5 to 5 range. Oh, okay.
What's the interest they charge?
I actually don't know on that. That's a great question.
Which company
are you? So I'm independent, which means I use a variety of companies, but Northwestern is kind of the one company that I can't use and don't use.
Okay,
so we can look that up.
Mass Mutual.
Mass Mutual?
What's the interest rate if you borrow the loan out?
Well, it depends. They have a variable rate right now that's 4%, and then they have a fixed rate at 8%. They have an option of either of the two. Yep, that's right. So most of the ones that are non-direct recognition that have variable rates are low, right, because interest rates are so low. But a company like Mass gives two options, and so that's why they have those two different situations. Yeah, good question. Anything else coming up? Okay. Let's talk about...
Let me talk about a couple other key characteristics before I move on from this.
Put it there if you want to follow this.
into the load provision already, so I probably don't need to hash that out. Although I will talk about it from a client perspective, the way that we teach this is relatively simple. So most people, as we're talking about this idea of borrowing money, the biggest thing that, or maybe one of the main questions they get is, and to be honest, it's what I thought initially, why would I borrow money from myself? There's no reason that I would do that, right? Have any of you ever heard that question before? It's a question that I heard pretty commonly. So the way that we describe it is the first thing we try to help people understand is that when we're borrowing, we're not actually borrowing from ourselves or from our policy. What we are doing is we're borrowing from the general account of the insurance company. So in a very real way, we have our policy with the cash value in it, and then we have this massive general account from the insurance company that rather than taking money from our own policy, we're actually taking money from this general account. And therefore, the money that's there is continually moving, it's growing, it continues to earn interest, dividends, etc. And so again, the cool thing about the loan is that when you understand that it's more like an equity line of credit or like something like that, it kind of opens their eyes to feel like, oh, this actually can be more valuable, right? Because I have a growing asset and I have the ability to loan up to the extent of the cash value. Okay, when we're talking about death benefit, it kind of seems ironic to have death benefit to talk about the living benefits, but in this situation we're just talking about the ability that the death benefit gives us more freedom, right? Everyone's probably heard of the permission slip analogy. It gives us the permission, in many cases, to use our assets differently because we have the value of a tax-free death benefit which can come in and generate that. Long-term care, this is a big deal, especially now, and some people have mentioned that even on the main platform, but from a long-term care perspective, the main thing that we're talking about here is just that we can simply, we have the ability to plan for long-term care, at least as an option, in a different way than the traditional strategy, which is just buying long-term care. I usually tell people there's two main challenges that exist with long-term care. The first one is that the premiums aren't set, right? So I know a lot of people that we meet with who might have started out at a $4,000 premium. It's 10 or 15 years later, and they're now at a $8,000 premium. Well, long-term care and the values just haven't been around long enough for the insurance companies to have accurately known how to price them, right? So for most cases, a lot of people have the challenge of a possibility of their premiums increasing. The second one is that there's about a 50-50 chance that we use it, right? So everyone knows that, everybody knows somebody that's needed long-term care help. No one's disputing that there's a huge need and value that comes with a long-term care benefit. However, I could pay in premiums for a long time and never get anything back out. And so what we have here is, for really in two ways we can plan for it, depending on the insurance company and the product you're using. Most companies now will offer an accelerated death benefit chronic illness, which, as they talked about, just allows you to use the death benefit while you're alive for long-term care purposes. Two out of six functions of daily living. If you qualify for traditional long-term care, you qualify for this, and it's a no-cost benefit unless you use it. Right? So what that means is that I'm not going to take it out dollar for dollar on the death benefit in most cases. There's going to be a pro rata. But either way, people can know that I can either take money. Before I get onto that, the second one is that some companies will offer an actual cost rider, and they can be pretty valuable. It's still an accelerated death benefit, but they're using an additional cost, and normally you can take out like a percentage of it for every, maybe it's a 2% per year for 20 years or something like that. But either way, there's an opportunity to plan for long-term care without having to actually purchase long-term care. So again, it's just an efficient way to use an asset, because I know I'm going to get my money in one of three ways. I'm either going to use the cash for investment opportunities, for cash flow, for tax-free income in retirement, or I'm going to use the accelerated death benefit for long-term care type purposes. And finally, at the very least, I know that there's going to be a tax-free death benefit for my beneficiaries. So that's the conversation around long-term care. Creditor protection is also one of those things that for a lot of the people that we talk to who are conservative, maybe they're concerned about the market, maybe they're even just kind of almost anti-government to some extent, right? Or maybe that's not the right word, but just maybe don't feel like they have a lot of confidence. This creditor protection and privacy becomes a big deal. In most states, life insurance has some sort of creditor protection. It's different on a state-by-state basis, so I probably shouldn't go into many details, but from my experience, I can't think of a state off the top of my head that doesn't have some creditor protection specific to life insurance. Disability, in this case, what we're doing is we're just talking about the value of being able to utilize cash as a kind of an emergency fund almost, right? So the ability to have your emergency savings, so if a challenging situation comes up, I have a pot where I have cash that I can draw on from in case of disability protection. And of course, we can also put the disability waiver, right? Which obviously creates another valuable piece. And then just kind of the other emergencies. Okay, so any questions on kind of the core characteristics of whole life insurance? Yes.
The long-term care, you know, when it comes to the landscape of whole life contracts, what companies do an indemnity versus a reimbursement?
Yeah, that's a good question. I could name a few that I know that do each, but I guess I wouldn't know that well. Do you have anything else on that? Yeah, I mean, I've been with companies that do indemnity, and then I've had the other, but I don't know if I could get that specific. Sorry. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about kind of how we position it, right? So these are the key characteristics. And I've probably gotten into a little bit more detail than I would with an actual live-in life. But the idea here is that I want to move them from a place of understanding very little to a place where they can say, oh, wow, this vehicle has several core benefits for me that I may have not realized before. Yes? Yeah. This to help people, and we only have about 10 minutes left, so I'll try to go through this as quick. Actually, you know what? Let me ask this question. So we only have 10 minutes. Here I was going to talk about just kind of the positioning of life insurance. The other piece that we were considering talking about was actually how we build the policy themselves. Does anyone have a preference?
No,
either way.
Positioning.
Okay. Yeah, okay, so we have kind of this diagram here, obviously the sun diagram, and Rod's even gone ahead and talked about seeing it in a whole new light somewhere, which is really great. But when we talk about it normally, we use a concept we call the perpetual wealth strategy, and at that core, where we're seeing the whole life, we talk about a wealth maximization account. And the idea here is that we want to focus on the different ways that we can utilize it to create value in our financial world from an overall financial perspective. So we've talked about several of these things, but there's a couple that I haven't hit on as much. So, for example, who can think of why whole life insurance or what situation I could use whole life insurance as a CD alternative? Any thoughts or ideas on that? So who's met somebody that has $400,000 sitting in CDs? Maybe it's, you know, maybe they want the FDIC protection or whatever. But they just got their money sitting there, and obviously it's earning very little, but they want it to be super safe, and the reason they have it there is because they know it's going to be there. Everyone probably has run into that situation. And in this case, we're actually talking about we're basically throwing out all of the other stuff we talked about here, and we're talking about using a MEC. A Has anyone ever used a modified endowment contract as a value proposition? You have. Awesome. So the idea on using a single premium for a modified endowment contract is that we want to get as much money into the policy with as little cost as we can. And in order to do that, some companies, and I should probably be careful here because there's only a handful left, some companies will allow us to dump in, you know, really as much money as we want to and are able on a single one-time basis. And I could have, you know, a $25,000 or $50,000 debt. So the idea here is that we're going to keep that death benefit as low as possible, and we're just going to chuck that thing full of cash. By doing that, I can grow the cash much faster than I could in a traditional policy, but I do lose one benefit, right? In a traditional policy, I'm able to pull money out tax-free on the back end. In a MEC, or a modified endowment contract, I basically have changed it to like an annuity, right? So instead of building it like where I'm paying taxes on the way in, and then I'm deferring and ultimately bringing tax-free on the way out through a loan, in a MEC, we're just going to have it just as ultimately tax-deferred growth, and then when they bring money back out, it would be the interest would be taxable. But again, the idea here is that we don't have to put premiums in over many years, right? We just have the opportunity to say, hey, do you want a really safe place where you can earn 4 or 5% on a fixed basis without having to worry about, you know, the ups and downs of the market or whatever? And so in that CD alternative example, we have tons of clients who will just dump loads of cash into a modified endowment contract. Let's talk about opportunities for a minute. A lot of the people that come to us are wanting to know how they can position or get greater value out of it. And what we talk about with that kind of centerpiece is our wealth maximization account. The idea is that we're going to use this account that sits in the center of our financial world to create value for opportunities. And when I'm talking about opportunities, I'm talking about a variety of different things. It could be real estate. It could be, so for example, someone that likes to flip properties, or maybe they just want to get into real estate and they're interested in doing it. Life insurance ends up being a really valuable way to do it because obviously they can cash flow money in and out without ever having to pay tax on that money that's going in now, right? So a lot more effective than a bank. And not only that, but obviously they're getting a lot more interest than they could otherwise. So anyway, real estate opportunities, it could be your own business. Could be even, you know, more aggressive types of investments if it's someone that's really creative. But again, the idea here is that I want to use it to the extent it's possible for opportunities that come up that accelerate the growth of our financial world. So we're maybe a little bit untraditional in the sense that we're not telling people, hey, put your money here and just kind of let it sit and grow at a good interest rate and be safe. Although there are clients that we have who prefer to do that. But we teach people how to actively go out and look for opportunities to generate additional wealth, whether that's through, like I say, different types of investment opportunities, etc. So that probably hits on that pretty well. I kind of hit on most of these things already.
Another question here.
Yeah.
So for the CD alternative,
yeah,
like you said, so the whole life is pretty liquid, right? The money.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
My question is, like, if someone has, like, let's say $400 a year, putting the CD alternative, like putting all that MAC in, and let's say they said, well, I actually want to connect to next year out.
Yeah.
So
good question. So the answer to that question is we're going to show them the illustration up front, right? So in a situation like that, we're probably not going to be even in value in that first year, but usually by the second or third year, we'll have more cash in it than we initially put. So what I would tell for us an individual is, hey, if this is money that you need to keep liquid, that you're likely going to be using in the next 12, 16 months, or 18 months, all of it, then putting it in life insurance, period, is probably not a good idea. But if you're only going to need maybe a portion, or you don't know if you're going to need it at all, it's kind of your safety net. Maybe it's going to be a supplement to Social Security and pensions, that kind of thing. Then that's where we would primarily use it. But we want to make sure that we're not having people put money in with that they're going to take it right back out. At at least in a MEC situation. Now, in a traditional policy, we could probably do that and still create value because they have the ability to cash flow in and out. But in that situation, we probably want to make sure that it's money that's kind of getting put there. It's likely to be sitting there for a little time. Yeah, good question. Anything else? Yeah.
You know, I'm a little surprised because I would have thought that that whole life would be used for living benefits in a spend, and you mentioned it, but kind of a spend down strategy. I can spend my other assets down.
Yeah.
I can, and then I don't have to like keep my assets as my life insurance because I've got this piece of life insurance. It's paid up. It's done. It's gonna be there. It's guaranteed. That allows me to annuitize or spend down other things. Is this part of your strategy?
Yeah, so you're talking about kind of the wealth-building cornerstones concepts that they use, or the things they teach at LEAD. And those are definitely part of the retirement conversation. And so we use the examples of the permission slip and being able to spend down other assets, knowing that I have, it's kind of like pension maximization, right, except for our assets. So yes, we use that all the time. I just didn't have enough time to kind of get into that specific. But I think it's a good point. It's incredibly valuable. And that way, of course, you're using the death benefit. So on that first thing, we talked about the death benefit, and that's kind of where that probably applies the most. Now, you could also use it as like a volatility buffer, which we do frequently. And anyone that's, you know, that's familiar with wealth-building cornerstones, the idea of the volatility buffer is simply that we're using a combination of both investment-based assets and actuarial assets, in other words, life insurance. We have the ability to take the majority of our income from our investment assets, and then as the market may or may not be performing, that's when we go and we start taking cash from the policy. So it can be used in a variety of different ways, but yeah. What were you saying?
Well, if no one else has any other questions, I'll ask another one.
Yeah, please.
How do you sell against index life?
Yeah, good question. So, generally speaking, and I don't sell index universal life. I maybe sold one policy because the person was insistent, but I really just don't sell. So, the reason, and it's not that it's a bad product, so it's not, I don't want to try to, I'm not here to beat up index universal life, but obviously we're talking about whole life, and so.
We want to hear you beat it up a little bit.
Okay.
Just spar with it a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah,
So here's what I would say. There's a few challenges that exist with indexed universal life. And, in my opinion, my humble opinion, is that one, we haven't had it for a long enough time frame to know what it's really going to do. So I was unfortunate and fortunate to take over a book of business from an older agent at Beneficial years ago, and he had sold hundreds of universal life products. Now they weren't indexed universal life, but they were universal life. And unfortunately, I inherited basically a failing universal life book of business. It was really awful. We were talking to people who were getting in their older ages, and they were basically getting letters that said, hey, you've either got to increase your premium or the policy's going to lapse. And so the biggest challenge, I think, is that we don't have the guarantees, we don't have the, especially if we're going to be using this for opportunities. In my opinion, it's too risky to have our life insurance be at risk. And so, obviously, the other thing that we'll do is we'll look at illustrations and just put simply, it doesn't matter how we structure IUL, there is a possibility that it could go to zero, right? So, with whole life insurance, I know with complete confidence that my cash value is going to grow. Even if they don't pay dividends, I know that I'm going to have cash value there that I can use. And with the IUL, of course, I have the possibility of running out of money, right? So those are a couple thoughts. I could probably go on. My time's up anyway.